Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and this is Side 2 of For the Record Program 348, titled Machiavelli 101. This is being recorded on February 17th of the year 2002, and we're going to continue with our discussion of the, at times I think, deliberate promotion of ethnic and geographical polarities for an altogether cynical and fascistic purpose. This also in the context of a multinational corporate policy, which may be relatively short-sighted, in some ways Machiavellian itself, but within which I suspect the underground Reich, as I have called it, cementing powerful elements in this country, Europe, and the Middle East, is working to not only eclipse American power, but to bring about the annihilation of Israel and world Jewry in keeping with the doctrine of the underground Reich. Now, in the first side of this broadcast, we took a look at, among other things, the fact that, according to European intelligence officials, Al-Qaeda was now in the process of making entry as a place of refuge into Austria. And that is a very interesting place indeed. Not only is Austria not a place that has a large Middle Eastern population, but one of its most prominent politicians, the neo-fascist Jörg Haider of the Freedom Party, an individual that we've spoken about many times in the past, has been very active in promoting Austrian political reaction by railing against foreigners. And yet he also is, as we are about to see, making at least diplomatic alliances with elements in the Middle East that are anti-Semitic, Islamo and or Arabo-fascist, to coin a term, and also anti-American. We concluded the first side of the broadcast with a review of an article from the San Francisco Chronicle of May 3rd of 2001. This in turn excerpted from For the Record Program 306, recorded on May 16th of 2001, and a top Iraqi-born weapons dealer who has been trafficking weapons to Saddam Hussein and who has served as a political and economic conduit between European neo-fascist elements and Saddam Hussein is based in Carinthia in Austria. Jörg Haider is the governor of Carinthia in Austria. And bear in mind that Al-Qaeda, according to European intelligence officials, is retrenching in Austria, among other places, or at least using that as a place of refuge. Now, in that context, consider the following. This is from the London Independent of February 14th of 2002. Visit their website at http://news.independent.co.uk. This article is by Rupert Cornwell in Washington. It's headlined, America Turns on Haider for, quote, encouraging Saddam, unquote. It reads in part, as Washington rattled its sabers still louder against Saddam Hussein, the State Department issued a scathing rebuke of the Austrian right-winger Jörg Haider for his visit to Baghdad this week, saying it would encourage Iraq to be still more intransigent. The stern language of the United States official denouncing Mr. Haider's visit as, quote, inappropriate and counterproductive, unquote, coincided with a new blast against President Saddam by George Bush, who declared the U.S. would do whatever was needed, quote, to defend the American people, unquote. Note Jörg Haider making a visit to Saddam Hussein and formally, at least, visibly allying himself with Saddam Hussein at the very same time that Saddam is under increased pressure from the United States. Saddam Hussein himself, as we looked at, has something of a fascist heritage. His political mentor and uncle, Khairullah al-Tufah, an admirer of Hitler and worked against the British on behalf of the Third Reich in the uprising led by Ali Rashid during the course of World War II. Note also this aspect of Jörg Haider's visit to Saddam Hussein. The Financial Times of Thursday, February 14th of 2002, has the following article by Delia Meth Cohn in Vienna and William Hall in Zurich. It's headlined, Haider stays in the headlines with, quote, private, unquote, visit to Saddam. Skipping down, Haider's latest headline-grabbing move was to pay a visit to Iraqi President Saddam Hussein on what he termed a humanitarian trip. The Iraqis broadcast the visit on TV, claiming it showed the lack of European support for, quote, the U.S. and Zionist conspiracy, unquote. We're going to be taking a look at the alliance between European and American fascist elements and Middle Eastern extremist and fascist elements against not only Israel, but Jews in general, in keeping with the dictates of the Underground Reich, which overlaps both elements and, I believe, in many ways controls them. Consider also, once again, Machiavelli 101. For people who say they don't believe in conspiracy theories, read The Prince by Niccolo Machiavelli, required reading for any introductory poli-sci course, or at least it used to be. Also read The Art of War by Sun Tzu. You don't believe in conspiracy theories? Well, educate yourselves. The New York Times of Thursday, February 7th of 2002, contains the following article by Stephen Erlanger at Stateline Vienna, headlined, "Austrian Rightist is Working on His Comeback." And this article reads in part, "The biggest problem with Jörg Haider," unquote, the populist right-winger whose party shares power in Austria, again quoting, "is that he has two words, Ausländer raus, foreigners out, but we need 2 hours to answer it," said Dieter Bogner, a museum designer and one of Vienna's great and good. Mr. Haider has never actually used those words to insist that foreigners leave. He is more concerned that more do not arrive. But, he, quote, "creates a very unpleasant atmosphere, and it takes a lot of time to fight it," unquote, Mr. Bogner said. Now, again, note that Jörg Haider has been very active and very successful in mobilizing elements of the Austrian political populace against foreigners, Middle Eastern immigrants in particular. And yet note also that in keeping with his anti-American and anti-Semitic stance, he is now making common cause with Saddam Hussein against the United States and Israel and the, quote, Zionist conspiracy, unquote. We're going to be taking a look at this convergence of sort of a Machiavellian cynicism with international fascism, and we're going to be taking a look at both American and European right-wingers and fascists and how at the same time they are using anti-Arab and anti-Middle Eastern sentiment to mobilize people in Europe and the United States on behalf of their cause, and at the same time they're railing against Israel and Jews and allying with Middle Eastern and Islamo-fascist elements in order to, at least in their eyes, destroy Jews not only in Israel but also in the United States. At the same time, many of these same elements, as I've said, restating this, are also utilizing anti-immigrant and in particular anti-Middle Eastern immigrant sentiment to mobilize people of European extraction on behalf of their own cause. In that context, the New York Times of Wednesday, January 30th of 2002 should be considered. This is an article by Stephen Erlanger. It's datelined Berlin, January 28th, and headlined, "A Jumpy Anti-Immigrant Europe is Creeping Rightward." It reads in part, "From Spain to Scandinavia, European politics is drifting to the right. As the economy slows, political parties stressing law and order and stricter controls on immigration are gaining ground, and mainstream conservative politicians are becoming more popular. In the most striking example, a German conservative, Edmund Stoiber, has ridden these issues of economic and personal insecurity hard, opening up a small but persistent lead of 3 percentage points in the opinion polls over the incumbent Chancellor Gerhard Schröder of the Social Democrats." The article goes on to describe the success in many European countries of right-wing and or neo-fascist parties that have been able to generate a certain amount of political sympathy because of the large influx of people from Middle Eastern and other Muslim countries into Europe. At the same time, as I said, they are also, to a certain extent, allying themselves with Islamo-fascist and or Middle Eastern fascist, Arabo-fascist, to coin a term, elements against the Jews and Israel. Consider the following article from the Searchlight magazine's issue of January of 2002. The Searchlight is a British anti-fascist publication, and this particular article from Searchlight issue number 319, the January 2002 issue, is an article by Devin Burghardt. It's headlined Stateside and subtitled "After the Attacks, American White Nationalism Since September 11th, 2001. What we're going to be looking at, first of all, is the National Alliance. That's the American fascist group that publishes both the Turner Diaries and the book Serpent's Walk that I've used, and their positive response to September 11th. Devin Burghardt writes, as the tragic events of September 11th unfolded, wannabe white revolutionaries cheered as Jew York City, unquote, crumbled. Even before the Twin Towers had collapsed, one Aryan Nations leader was already celebrating, exclaiming on his website, quote, may the World Trade Center burn to the ground, unquote, and, again quoting, may the war be started, unquote. Another member advised, quote, the time for all Aryans to attack is now, not later. Our opportunity may never be the same, unquote. The day after, while thousands of bodies still lay buried in the rubble of the World Trade Center, National Alliance leader Billy Roper commented to members, quote, the enemy is for now at least our friends. Anyone who is willing to drive a plane into a building to kill Jews is all right by me. I wish our members had half as much testicular fortitude, unquote. By the way, that stance is in some ways reflective of the fascist third position that we've spoken about many times in the past. Continuing, focusing blame on Jews in Israel for the attacks, some white nationalists anticipate that anti-Semitism will again find a mass appeal. The World Church of the Creator website, for instance, shows the World Trade Center burning with the caption, quote, friendship with Israel leads to this, unquote. Though more refined, the white nationalist think tank American Renaissance promotes the same message. Quote, if we go to war, it will not be because we are the land of freedom and opportunity, but because we are the best friend and benefactor of Israel, unquote, noted Jared Taylor. National Alliance members have been distributing a flyer reading, quote, is our involvement in the security of the Jewish state worth this, unquote, above a picture of the collapsing towers. William Pierce, the leader of the National Alliance and author of the notorious terrorist Bible, The Turner Diaries, hopes that the American public will begin to blame Jews, which he envisions as a key step towards their extermination. He noted, quote, the number who will understand where to place the blame will continue to grow, and the demand for a real solution, a final solution, will grow too, unquote. Note again the promotion of the of American support for Israel as a rationale here, not only to perhaps promote anti-Semitism, but ultimately, at least in the eyes of William Pierce, to promote a final solution to the, quote, Jewish problem in the United States. We're going to be taking a look at recent developments in the Middle East, and that may lead to a, quote, final solution, unquote, to the Jewish problem, unquote, in the Middle East. What we're going to look at now, however, and considering one of the articles that we looked at in For the Record program number 336, in which we took a look at 22 different affidavits alleging contact between Timothy McVeigh, the now executed conspirator in the Oklahoma City bombing, and Middle Eastern men. There were 22 separate affidavits, bearing in mind that someone who was denied the opportunity to testify at McVeigh's trial was a fellow named Edwin Angeles, who described apparent contacts between Terry Nichols, McVeigh's co-conspirator, and Ramzi Youssef, an Al-Qaeda milieu associate and the person convicted of the first attack on the World Trade Center, these attacks taking place in the Philippines. We took a look at that in For the Record program 330, among other broadcasts. Program 330. We're going to take a look now at a hypothetical development that took place in the Deep South. Obviously, that is an area where white supremacist groups are very active. The National Alliance itself is based in West Virginia. There have been reports of new attacks that are being proposed by Al-Qaeda. The following article is from the New York Times of Thursday, February 14th of the year 2002. This is an article, an AP story, Dateline Memphis, February 13th. The headline is A Suspicious Death. Crash Adds Mystery to an Inquiry. Listen very carefully to the following article and consider the association and the place. This is Dateline Memphis, February 13th. The focus of an investigation into a fraudulent driver's license scheme with possible terrorism ties has shifted to the death of one of the people who was charged in the scheme. The person, Catherine Smith, was killed in a fiery crash early Sunday, a day before her hearing in federal district court here. Ms. Smith, 49, was burned beyond recognition and a prosecutor described the crash as, quote, most unusual and suspicious, unquote. Now, it's not clear, interrupting briefly, it's not clear from the article what ethnic background Ms. Catherine Smith was, but listen to the identity of the people that she was associated with, and consider that this is the Deep South. Ask yourself how probable this is. Continuing, was it an accident? Was it a suicide? Or was it something else? An FBI spokesman, George Bold, said. Ms. Smith's car hit a utility pole in a rural area just north of the Mississippi state line. The authorities do not know whether the fire started before or after the crash, but an FBI agent, J. Suzanne Nash, said that the gas tank did not explode and that the car was only slightly dented. Ms. Smith and five men, all Middle Easterners, were charged last week with conspiracy to get Tennessee driver's licenses under false pretenses. In addition, the FBI was investigating whether the men had connections to the September 11th attacks. Three of the men, Mustafa Saeed Abu Shaheen, Abul Musun Mahmoud Hamad, and Mohammed Farez, were charged with trying to obtain Tennessee driving licenses by submitting false information and were ordered detained today in federal court. The two others, Khaled Otla, 31, and Sakera Hamad, 24, were being held without bond after a court hearing on Monday. Ms. Smith and the men were arrested on February 5th. Prosecutors said she had processed four driver's license applications that day based on false information that Mr. Odla provided. Agent Nash said that when Sakera Hamad was arrested, a September 5th visitor's pass for the World Trade Center was found in his wallet. Federal authorities also learned that Mr. Odla drove to Memphis from New York City on September 11th, she said. So what happened to Catherine Smith? The gas tank to her car did not explode, and the car was only slightly dented, but she was burned beyond recognition. She was had been charged with obtaining, attempting to obtain a false ID and driver's licenses for five different Middle Eastern men, and two of the men, Sakera Hamad, had a September 5th visitor's pass for the World Trade Center, and Mr. Odla had driven to Memphis from New York City on September 11th. As I'm recording this on February 17th of the year 2002, one should note that there have been new alerts of possible Al-Qaeda attacks. I would also note that Tennessee is where the Tennessee Valley Authority is located. There are nuclear facilities there. I would also note that George Bush is not exactly winning a lot of foreign policy points with regard to his axis of evil speech. There is no proof whatsoever that Iran was connected to Al-Qaeda in the September 11th attacks. There have been contradictory accounts of a possible Iraqi involvement, but nothing has ever been proved. And North Korea sure as hell wasn't involved in September 11th. And a lot of people have been very critical of George Bush identifying these three countries as the axis of evil. And I would also point out that he has not said anything about Saudi Arabia, and the evidence linking Saudi Arabia to the attacks is beyond dispute. And I would, you know, apparently there are not any Iranian, Iraqi, or North Korean participants in the Carlyle Group. I would also note that Iran has now decided to turn over some Al-Qaeda activists, not to the United States, but to Saudi Arabia. The Financial Times of Wednesday, February 13th of 2002, had an article by Guy Dinmore in Tehran headlined, "Iran Poised to Send Home Terrorism Suspects." Skipping down, he declined to identify the prisoners, this is an Iranian spokesman, but said the Taliban members would be given soon to Afghanistan's new interim administration, while the suspected Al-Qaeda activists would be handed to authorities in their home countries, which included Saudi Arabia. Personally, I think that including Iran, for all of its shortcomings and its documented history in the past of promoting Islamic fundamentalist terror, the Iranians are Shiites and the Al-Qaeda are Sunnis, and I think this is a very, very foolish gambit, and there are those who are agreeing. Now, consider again Machiavelli 101. Consider what I have called the Underground Reich, and I believe that the Bush administration is a front for the Underground Reich. I think George Bush himself is just a puppet. I don't think he has any real power. I think he does what he is told. The San Francisco Chronicle of February 17th of 2002 had the following article by Chris Matthews, a Chronicle columnist, called "Who Hijacked Our War?" And he's talking about the diversion of the public outrage and commitment after September 11th to something which really doesn't have very much at all to do with the attacks on the Pentagon or World Trade Center. Speaking of Bush's axis of evil, "It's driven Iran's President Mohammad Khatami, a moderate, into the welcoming arms of the zealots and millions of Iranians to the streets with renewed shouts of 'Death to America,'" unquote. "It's given Saddam Hussein a golden chance to pledge support for Iran, a country with which he fought an 8-year war should it come under American attack. It has exposed Israel to an Iraqi missile barrage in the event of a U.S. attack." Even before the axis of evil, unquote, speech, the chief of Israeli intelligence, General Amos Malka, said that if the United States tries to overthrow Hussein, Iraq would probably launch missiles at his country. Think again about the National Alliance, and think about Jörg Haider and other European and American neo-fascists and their connections with some of the very Middle Easterners that they despise. And consider also the arrest of Catherine Smith, now burned to death, burned beyond recognition in a suspicious car accident, who was going to obtain driver's licenses for 5 Middle Easterners. Is there an underground Reich attack planned for the United States? And is the Bush administration deliberately trying to, as I have said in the past, work on behalf of the underground Reich, utilizing dupes as well as knowledgeable conspirators to isolate and or destroy the United States, to perhaps drive it out of the Middle East, certainly discredit it, and also to annihilate Israel and world Jewry? In considering the axis of evil, consider who helped to arm Iran and Iraq, and when these countries were getting their start, so to speak, as terrorist axes of evil, this in the early 1980s. Reviewing information we've dealt with in past broadcasts from the book The Secret War Against the Jews, co-authored by John Loftus and Mark Ahrens. This book published in hardcover by St. Martin's Press, copyright 1994. One top secret National Security Decision Directive, NSDD No. 3, established a new intelligence organization for Vice President George Bush. The former CIA director now had become the head of his own separate spy agency in the White House. Again, quoting here from a document. "The Special Situation Group, or SSG, chaired by the vice president, is charged inter alia with formulating plans in anticipation of crises in order to facilitate this crisis pre-planning responsibility. A Standing Crisis Pre-Planning Group, or CPPG, is hereby established, and will, for each potential crisis, ensure that an interagency group is established and developing contingency plans. Providing guidance to the group and task it with the preparation of preemptive policy options to prevent a crisis if possible, as well as the preparation of politico-military options for dealing with the eventual crisis." That again from once top secret National Security Decision Directive NSDD No. 3. The authors go on to add, "It is clear from this top-secret document that Bush asked for and received authorization to prepare, quote, preemptive policy options, unquote." And, skipping down, "In short, George Bush's job was to coordinate the State Department, CIA, military, and any other government agency in preparation for another terrorist attack or hostage crisis. No one but Bush was responsible for the disasters to come." Skipping down. "When it came to terrorism or the Contras, Bush's Special Situations Group had the final say. To put it bluntly, Bush was running a White House within the White House. Its members could co-opt or circumvent any government agency they wished. There would be no leaks, but unfortunately no independent criticism of their plans either. The vice president's SSG was the perfect hiding place for some of the bizarre operations dreamed up by Bush, Casey, Robert Bud McFarlane, Dewey Claridge, and North. Our intelligence sources say that these five men are the, quote, morons, unquote, who bungled their way into the Iran-Contra affair and then tried to shift the blame to the National Security Council or to Israel, even to Ollie North, anywhere but back to the office of the vice president, unquote. And that same pre-crisis planning group was also used by George Bush to arm Saddam Hussein. And he did so in cooperation with William Casey. Turning once again to the secret war against the Jews, according to Alan Friedman's book Spider's Web, Vice President Bush played a covert role in Casey's Iraq initiative. Like Perry's discussion of Cambodia, Friedman makes a powerful case that Bush was inextricably intertwined with Casey's bizarre initiative to buy Iraqi oil and Hussein's allegiance with guns. There is no doubt that transferring American weapons to Iraq was highly illegal, but was approved by both Bush and Casey. It was also hidden from both the Secretary of State and Congress. Both times Casey and Bush teamed up, the operation involved gun running. It is no coincidence that both secret operations began in 1982, the same year that Vice President Bush established his Special Situations Group for Counterterrorism. What neither Perry nor Friedman realized was that Bush and Casey worked together on a third covert operation, the Arms for Hostages deal with Iran. According to our sources, the story of Bush's role as the secret architect of Irangate has never been told before. It was run just as poorly as the Cambodian gun-running operation and just as illegal as the arming of Iraq, but it was much better hidden from Congress, unquote. Note again, the elder George Bush and his special private intelligence agency, created as a result of the counterterrorism task force that he chaired, used in the early 80s to arm both Iraq and Iran, the axis of evil. It'll be interesting to see whether there will be a, quote, final solution, unquote, to the Jewish problem in Israel as a result of, ultimately, this sort of liaison. The programs I've recorded over the years are available from a CD and tape duplication service called Spitfire, one word, S-P-I-T-F-I-R-E. They can be reached at P.O. Box 1179, Ben Lomond, California, capital B-E-N, capital L-O-M-O-N-D, zip code 95005. Email mail at spitfirelist1word.com. Visit their website at www.spitfirelist.com. By the time you hear this program, there will be a detailed annotated description of the program in the For the Record section of the Spitfire website at spitfirelist.com. Be sure to follow the links in that description to two websites maintained by sister station WFMU-FM, which have virtually the entire For the Record series available for download and or streaming on Real Audio. The first airing of each For the Record program takes place at 9 p.m. on Monday night on KKUP. Visit their website for instructions on how to listen at www.kkup.com. This concludes For the Record program number 348, Machiavelli 101. This is being recorded on February 17th of 2002. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.